Yesterday, Cuba banned smoking in public places. World famous for its fine cigars, Cuba is the latest place to impose smoking bans to protect the public's health. Last March, Ireland banned smoking in workplaces, including pubs and restaurants. New York City has also banned smoking in the workplace, and recently San Francisco passed a ban on smoking in parks and other outdoor spaces. But there is a debate over the effectiveness of smoking bans. If you have a question about the science behind smoking bans, or if you've changed your smoking habits because of the bans, then join the conversation. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now is Kenneth Warner, director of the University of Michigan's Tobacco Research Network. He joins us from his office in Ann Arbor. Welcome.
Good afternoon.
So I guess the question is, I could ask you, do smoking bans work? But I guess it's, do they work to get people to quit smoking, or do they work to get people to have a healthier environment in which to work?
Well, the answer is yes and yes.
Okay.
We have to keep in mind that these laws were originally adopted for the purpose of protecting non-smokers. And specifically, the bans on smoking in the workplace are intended to protect workers.
Protect them as in, I don't like the fact that my coworker smokes, or protect them because I might be getting sick from their smoke?
The latter.
Okay.
To protect them from the adverse health consequences of environmental smoke.
Okay.
And they do indeed work. Now, there are multiple levels at which this question gets evaluated. First of all, do workers and customers of those establishments accept the laws? Do they like them? When you look at the laws 6 months into effect, the answer is absolutely yes. People are very accepting and even enthusiastic about them. People's exposure levels, specifically workers, but in some instances customers' exposure levels, have been measured, and it turns out they are indeed exposed to much less environmental smoke than they would be had they been in an environment in which smoking was permitted. So we actually have before and after measurements in the same establishments, and people have much less cotinine, which is a derivative of nicotine, in their urine, blood, breath, and so on.
Right.
A third measure, and this is the one you were alluding to initially, is what happens to people who work in smoke-free workplaces and also are smokers. And the answer is that working in that environment increases the rate of quitting, and it also reduces the daily consumption of smokers who continue to smoke while they're working in these environments. And this is very well established at this point.
Right. And so you've shown that the exposure to cigarette smoke goes down, and you showed both for the people who don't smoke and are just in the bars or the restaurants and happen to be around other smokers, so that effect goes away. And smokers, because they still like to go to bars or because they have to go to work and they're in a smoke-free workplace, they smoke less. So then the question is, Has there been enough time, because some of these things, you know, some of these diseases that are related to smoking take years to develop, has there been enough time to see a measurable change in public health statistics? Are the lung cancer rates going down even further than they would have if you just looked at the number of people who quit smoking?
Well, in my judgment, the answer to that question is no, we haven't had the time. And indeed, it's going to be complicated to actually assess it, because keep in mind that we're talking about a limited amount of exposure that is avoided here. We're talking about people in workplaces. People are exposed to tobacco smoke elsewhere. In addition, the exposure to the smoke of others causes a fraction of smoking-related disease. It's a significant amount of disease, but to evaluate reductions in lung cancer, heart disease, and the other major complications associated with smoking would be a very difficult thing to do.
We're talking about smoking bans, their effect on people's health, both the people who smoke and the people who don't smoke. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's take a call now and see what our listeners make of all this. Let's go to Mark in Casa Grande, Arizona. Mark, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. How are you today?
I'm fine.
Good. I'm living a smoke-free environment in a mail truck in Casa Grande. I just wanted to tell you that I've been a non-smoker all my life. My mother, on the other hand, has been smoking all my life. And she feels as if she has a 3-foot smoking area, which she carries with her wherever she goes. To me and her, we've never really seen it as a health issue as far as smoking bans in public places, but more of a convenience issue. There's nothing I hate more than going into a restaurant or a nightclub or a bar, or just be on airplanes and having to breathe in other people's cigarette smoke. It's just a convenience issue, and of course my mother feels that anybody who feels like I do is very selfish.
She feels that anybody who feels like you do is selfish.
Oh, incredibly selfish.
Well, it's interesting. I want to thanks for that call, Mark. I wonder if I can ask Kenneth Warner. I mean, we're looking at policies that were largely put in place. Well, you said that they originally put in place to protect workers, but it was a public health concern that people were instituting. Is that what's driving all bans now? Because some of them are bans on outdoor smoking, which, well, I guess you could argue that's part of the process of reducing the number of places that smokers can smoke and thereby encouraging them to smoke, well, forcing them to smoke less. But is it still a public health issue, or is it a courtesy issue, as the caller was saying?
Well, first of all, we have a lot of history here. If we go back to the original laws that restricted smoking in public places, we're going back 30 years to the mid-1970s. And at that time, frankly, we did not have the science that indicated that being exposed to other people's smoke was dangerous to health. That science is very well established at this point. And in fact, for the typical person, excluding workers who deal with specific chemicals in a factory setting, for the typical person, exposure to other people's tobacco smoke is probably the most serious environmental hazard they confront in terms of the threat to life and the various diseases that we're aware of. But clearly, when you start talking about extending laws into open-air environments, some of them make complete sense. If you're talking about a stadium where people are packed close together, doesn't matter that it's outdoors, they're still going to be exposed to smoke. If you're talking about a park, you're probably talking as much about sort of aesthetic and philosophical issues as you are the health of others who will be in the park, because obviously they're not going to be so exposed to that other individual's smoke.
Interesting. We have time for another call. Let's go to Peter in New London, Connecticut. Peter, welcome to the program.
Yes, good afternoon. And I just thought I'd, as a smoker, I thought I'd point out the positive aspects of the smoking ban. First of all, it's much nicer inside, even as a smoker, in a restaurant or a bar, things like that. But the other aspect is that we go outside, even here in New London, where it's cold, and smokers get a chance to chat with one another, which previously we didn't have that opportunity. And it makes for a nice bonding, if you will, of those who are, you know, suitably ostracized by society. So I'm all for the ban.
You're talking about the social payback to smokers for smoking bans. Interesting.
That's correct.
Have you heard that argument before, Kenneth Warner?
I haven't heard that one, but I certainly like the caller's attitude.
It does seem like a good attitude. So I have one other question, and we only have another minute or so left, but is it clear? I mean, if you had, you know, complete discretion of the public health dollar at this point, would you be spending it to expand, you know, programs that limit the amount of smoking in public places and things like that? Or is there some other pressing public health issue that should be seeing how this public health money is spent?
I'm always reluctant to see us making public health issues compete with each other.
Yeah, well.
Obesity, you know, there are any number of new issues that are terribly important. Within the field of tobacco control, there are a number of things that can be done and should be done. Clearly, restricting and, in fact, eliminating smoke where the public is exposed to it or where workers are exposed to it is a top priority from a basic public health point of view. It also turns out, something we haven't mentioned, it's not bad economics. The economic establishments that are affected by these laws always worry in advance that they're going to lose money, the bars and restaurants and the like. The research shows to the contrary. They actually do just fine after these laws are passed, and many of them, with hindsight, wish that they'd done it earlier.
Well, I'm afraid that's where we have to leave it. A good place to stop, I guess. And I thank you very much for your time today.
No, thank you.
Kenneth Warner, director of the University of Michigan's Tobacco Research Network. He joined us by phone from his office in Ann Arbor. In Washington, I'm Joe Palca, NPR News.